Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Now we wait it. Radio Rewind. Radio Rewind. The following content has previously aired on CJSF. But don't worry, we'll be back next week with fresh content. CJSF 90.1 FM. Diverse. Independent. Yours.
Good morning, good morning. We are dancing in with Soul Makassa, Mano Dibango. This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, right here in the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1, with your Friday Speak Up Show. Have we got a treat in store for you.
This is Charlotte Farrell, your own Sister C, here at the place to be, CJSF Radio 90.1 in Burnaby, CJSFCA, streaming worldwide. Today, you'll be hearing First Thursday's presentation of International Women's Month. Let's go and hear that now. Good afternoon and welcome to Powered by Age, Canada's longest running senior-led podcast. Today is our first broadcast of a series of March broadcasts that will focus on International Women's Month, where the theme is breaking the bias. And all of us know something about breaking the bias, and we are going to have special presentations by people during this month, but each of you will also have a prompt. And the prompt today is when we get to introducing ourselves, if you have a quote for Women's Day or a special thought to share that. I am happy to say and grateful to say that our work takes place on the unceded territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh people. We stand with them in believing that there will be a reconciliation of their properties in our lifetime. So starting right with the first person that came on, we'll have Leslie introduce herself.
Okay. Hi, Charlotte. I'm Leslie Hebert, and I'm sorry, I couldn't think of a quote. I just threw a blank on that one. I thought of, was it Aretha Franklin? Respect, R-E-S-P-E-C-T.
Yes, it's yes. A good quote. Ramona?
Hi, so I'm Ramona Srinivasan, a retired professor from Bombay University. And happy to be a woman and here today with all of you. and I was just trying to find out a quote when Leslie mentioned it. And so I'm going to go with Mother Teresa, whom I admire a lot. And she says, I alone cannot change the world, but I can cast a stone across the waters to create many ripples.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you. It was so true of her life.
Nice.
Prafulla?
Hi. My name is Prafulla Vyas, and I live in Milton. And at present, I can't think of any quote, but I can only say for myself that I'm not just a cook.
Okay.
I'm sure people think women are good cooks, you know, and nothing else. So I just thought that might be kind of interesting to talk about.
Oh, thank you. Anna?
Yes, I'm Anna, and I'm very proud that I grew up in the Philippines, and I'm very proud that I have a father who thought that women are equal, that he did not hold us back from doing what we wanted to do, and actually he encouraged us to do professional work. Yeah, considering that he was, he grew up in the Philippines, he's from the Philippines, and he was quite old when I was growing up. I thought he was quite progressive.
Very good. Thank you. Now, Neil has written many poems about his mother and motherhood. Introduce yourself.
Well, I missed the part of come on with a quote, but I have a poem that I'm going to read today called Who Is She to You? And I have delivered a signed copy to the Save on Foods in New Westminster, and this is in the women's locker room, so I'm going to read this. And obviously I'm a poet, old guy, happy camper. And I'm quite proud of the fact that I'm an international, and I'm not just a Canadian citizen, I'm an international of the world. So, Anna, kamusta ka? Mabuti bo.
Salamat.
Salamat. Walanga numa. So, I also speak pretty good Chinese and Ukrainian. Oh, please, may the energies of the world heal the wound that Ukraine has got right at this moment. So,
absolutely.
Naduhiras, which means that I'll see you again. So, anyway, happy to be here.
All right, thank you. Next is going to be Rosemary, who is our featured presenter today. But I'm going to share this thought from International Women's Month, which is, imagine a gender equal world, a world free of bias, stereotypes, and discrimination. Together, we can forge women's equality. If collectively, we can all break the bias. And of the different biases we're talking about this month, one is age-related bias. Next week, we have two people that will be talking about, as entrepreneurs, we will be talking about health bias. And the point is, it's not stopping with where we've observed it, but the things that people are doing that are breaking those biases. So, Rosemary, you could introduce yourself and start us off with age.
Well, I actually have two quotes. Oh, so first of all, my name is Rosemary, as Charlotte mentioned, and I am the Senior Services Coordinator at 411 Senior Center. My area of responsibility is the center's information and referral services. And while you were talking, I was about the feminist quotes. Two of them came to mind for me immediately, and they're two of my favorite quotes in the whole wide world. One of them is, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolution. And that is a quote. It's actually not a quote. It's a paraphrase based on a story where it's by Emma Goldman. And Emma Goldman was a feminist activist and anarchist in the late 19th, very early 20th century in Europe. And the story goes that she was out at a dance one evening, and one of her cousins, who was also an activist with her in political activism, came over to her while she was dancing vigorously and having a great time at this dance to remind her that she had some important meeting the next day. And it wasn't very becoming of her to be acting out in this way in public, because, you know, she's a political representative. She's someone, you know, who people look up to for leadership and stuff. And she apparently said, well, you know, I'm going to keep dancing. And it's along the lines of, if I can't dance, I don't want to be part of your revolutions. That if I can't dance, then it's not on. And she basically chastised him for interrupting her dancing and suggested that, yeah, if her dancing was unseemly, then perhaps she shouldn't be a revolutionary. My other favorite quote about feminism is, well-behaved women never make history. And that quote is from Laurel Thatcher Ulrich, who was a Pulitzer Prize winning historian. And I think she nailed it on the head. We don't hear about the well-behaved women. We hear about the ones who stirred the pot, shook the tree, all those important things that advance the rights and dignity of women. And that is very much tied in with ageism, which is the subject I've been asked to speak about today. Ageism is probably the last bastion of discrimination that is endorsed, in the sense that we have laws, rules, policies, as well as social practices that, rather than challenging ageism, tend to reinforce it. So an example is the BC Human Rights Code does not, has all kinds of prohibitions about discrimination, but it actually permits forced retirement at age 65. You cannot, if you are in a job where you are forced to retire at age 65, because that is the company policy or the industry standard or whatever, you have no claim against the BC Human Rights Code on the basis of age discrimination. So that's an example of how it's actually endorsed. It's enshrined in our legislation. Ageism, ultimately, I think, stems from an overall lack of respect for elders. I'm not a historical expert on the subject, but I suspect that we didn't see as much discrimination and poor treatment of elders in past generations as we are seeing, as we have seen more in the, say, the late 20th century and up until now, because in, especially in a pre-industrial culture, elders would have been the carriers of all the wisdom and knowledge of a society. To disregard them would be to disregard your entire society and culture. And you were absolutely reliant on your elders to pass on history, knowledge, skills that you couldn't go and look up on the internet or read in a book. You had to engage with them in order to learn these things. And of course, with industrialization and now with multimedia, we can find out all kinds of stuff without asking our elders. Doesn't necessarily mean that the information is good or accurate, but we can Google stuff and we think we know it all. So what do we need these people for? We've got the internet, we've got it all figured out. A lot of the assumptions that are foundational to ageism are that elders automatically have a lack of mental or emotional capacity. They're slow. They just don't pick things up as quick as the rest of us. Yeah, their minds aren't as quick. So we really don't want to burden them with too much information because they're slow. They are an uninformed group of people because they're not listening to the latest pop music or wearing the latest fashions or watching the new hit comedy on TV, or they might be doing all these things, but we assume that they're not. And therefore we assume that they are generally uninformed about the world altogether, not just about pop fashions or music. They are unaware of what's going on around them. You know, that gets back to that slow thing. So, you know, a grandmother sitting quietly in her chair, observing what's going on around her, is assumed to not be listening, assumed to not be processing, assumed to not have thoughts or opinions on what everyone around her is talking about and doing or saying. And the elderly in our society are often considered to be disposable. And I think, you know, our long-term care system illustrates that perfectly. I actually tend to refer to our long-term care system and our elder care system as people decline in old age as more of a warehousing of people than a care system. The impacts for women who, as they age in terms of ageism, tend to be more severe because they get compounded by sexism. So a lot of the judgments that elder men suddenly encounter, they're being dismissed as being slow or unaware or lacking capacity, is probably a new experience for a lot of men as they age. Unfortunately, it's not a new experience for women. We're used to being dismissed. We're used to being disregarded. We're used to not being believed when we speak our truths. But the other thing that happens with ageism for women is we become erased as people. Our sexuality is removed, especially if we're postmenopausal, because if women can't have babies, what use are they, right? So all of the limitations and the assumptions about elders are usually deeper and more severe assumptions when they're applied to women, because they're compounded by the existing sexism in the society. Another way that ageism definitely impacts seniors is the push to digitize everything. Government services that we used to be able to rely on to access by going to an office in person or picking up the phone or maybe writing a letter, these services are increasingly only being offered via the internet, via email, via websites where you have to upload documents and click on links and fill in digital forms. And there often isn't an alternative means of service. You know, when you phone the agency and go, well, you know, I'm working with someone who doesn't have a computer, how can they access your services? They're like, what do you mean they don't have a computer? They're like, well, they don't.
Yeah.
But they still need to apply for XYZ benefit, or they still need to register for XYZ service. And it's really funny and not so funny sometimes to hear the puzzlement at the other end of the phone that there's an adult in the world who doesn't have a computer or doesn't know how to use email or doesn't even care to have email. I know people who are perfectly capable of operating a computer, who absolutely understand what email is. They just don't want it. It's annoying. They'd rather not communicate that way. And so when we digitize everything, we, first of all, we remove that choice of I've decided I don't want to communicate with people by email. That choice becomes removed because often that becomes a primary means of engagement, not just for government services, but for civic engagement. If you want to participate in city council meetings with the city of Vancouver, you can go in person, but the other means, the primary means of accessing them is by going online. So it's not just about access to services, it's about opportunities for engagement and gathering and connection. So what the digital divide has done for seniors is actually increased their isolation and increased how much they're left out of the calculations when different governments, for example, or organizations are making plans about how to engage with their community. They don't consider anything outside of a computer. They don't consider things like how far their offices are from a bus stop and how it might be difficult for a senior to walk those 5 blocks from the nearby bus stop to their office. And these are all kinds of things that don't get taken into consideration by social planners, by government policy people, or even sometimes, you know, people such as myself who are just, you know, working in a community-based social service office like 411. I mean, obviously, because we're 411, we're always focused on that. But colleagues of mine working in other agencies might not twig to certain supports that would benefit seniors. Are you asking people to stand up and line up like the food bank does, for example? The food bank requires people to stand outside and line up to get food. But if you're a senior or a person with disabilities, that could be very challenging for you, especially if it's a long line like the depot right near our office here, where you can see people standing in line for an hour or so. But, you know, again, if you want to access that, you need to persevere is kind of the attitude. So there's lots of examples of how ageism manifests in our society. And I think what it is ultimately reflective of is the fact that seniors haven't been of late counted among the greater society as people who are active and contribute to society. And they don't get the respect as a social group, as carriers of wisdom and knowledge that they used to get in cultures all around the world. We see less and less of that, particularly in the West. I don't know if there's anything else.
What are some of the things that you are doing at 411 Center? What are some of the ways that you've seen women in particular pushing back against these biases?
From my own past experience working as a feminist in feminist organizations, usually the most successful way to push back against biases is to group, is to gather with people who are suffering the same form of discrimination as you are. Because one thing I know for sure is that women share stories. We share information with each other. Whether as young women, we were warning each other about stay away from that guy over there, he's a total creep, which is, you know, trust me, guys, we've been warning each other about creepy guys forever. It always comes as a shock to men that we actually know who the creeps are. But that, as we age, that information exchange might be different. In fact, one of the myths of ageism is that women of a certain age cannot be victims of sexual assault because they're not sexual. So, and we know, I know personally that of women who have been sexually assaulted in old age. So again, that's another aspect of ageism is when we dehumanize people and sexuality is part of our humanity, when we remove those concepts from our perception of people, we stop seeing things, ills or injustices that are done to them because we just don't think it could happen. But I think the greatest strength is for women to gather, to share their strategies with each other, how they have dealt with different situations that they've encountered where they know that they are being disregarded because of their age. Sharing tactics and strategies, that's, I would say it's foundational to any form of resistance against any form of discrimination, because until you come together to share those stories with each other and the strategies and tactics that have worked for you, you could be believing that you're the only one. You're in isolation. You internalize the ism. So you, oh, I must be a doddering old fool because everybody treats me like one. And then all of a sudden you realize that, no, it's not, it's not just you who's being treated like a doddering old fool. It's every age peer of yours who is experiencing this too. And when you start to share these stories, it breaks the isolation, which is the first step. And then it gives you the emotional support as well as just the support of having tactics and strategies to respond. And it also creates a community that you can reach out to in moments when you need backup or just emotional support because you had a crap day because someone decided to treat you like you were a doddering old fool.
What do you think, Emma?
Well, first of all, I think everybody has the responsibility to keep up with what is required. Like, you can't ask the government to do everything or any organization to do this. I think we have the responsibility also to do what we can to live in such environment. And also another thing, I understand that some senior citizens, women or men, are strapped for gas. I mean, internet is expensive.
And that's part of the digital divide right there. They can't afford it.
Yeah, that's right. But it happens to women and men too, isn't it? Men are also just receiving a pension or OAS or whatever, same as women.
Mm-hmm. No, I never said this was exclusively female. I just really pointed out that sexism makes it worse for women because they're already existing as women from day one in a society that has a misperception of them and their agency. And then when you become a senior woman, you just get erased even more because now you're desexualized and you get all those other assumptions added to the pre-existing assumptions of sexism. So the assumption that you're slow, that you're unaware of your surroundings, that you're a disposable entity, that there's no sense in trying to teach you the internet because you'd never figure it out anyways.
You know, I want to chirp in here at this point is that I would suggest to the six women that are on this panel with me that you have no idea what it's like to be a man. And it's it's extremely painful to be treated as though you're a lecherous old child molester, which is what I get if I say hello to people on the street. And I'm an open-hearted human being who always says hello to people. And I want to tell you, I understand that it is painful as an elder woman to be in this world. I just want to include the fact that it's painful to be an elder man in this society. And I get things like, interestingly, I had my car keys because I was going down to, and I'm 82 years old, which I'm sure everybody's heard my pride of having another birthday last week. But I had my car keys in my hand, and she says, the woman in the elevator with me says, are you still driving?
That's a perfect example.
Yeah.
Excuse me. You know, there's I wanted to say one last thing, and that is that there was a woman, on Thursday night I had my men's group meeting, and that was my birthday party, because my birthday was last Wednesday.
And, I remember.
Sorry?
I remember, it was your birthday last week.
Yeah. And I'm on my way to, because it was in New West at the spaghetti factory, which is right in the new West Terminal, so I didn't drive. SkyTrain's right outside my door, practically. And I'm on my way to the SkyTrain to go to my birthday party, and there's a woman lighting a cigarette, and I'm practicing not being judgmental. So I didn't say anything about the here you are lighting a cigarette on yada, yada, yada. But in front of her was two plants, beautiful plants. And I said to her, golly, those plants are beautiful. And I don't want you to go away, because she said, please have one of these plants. I said, thank you so much.
That's an absolutely gorgeous flower.
Yeah, it's a calla lily. And I took it to my birthday party. I found somebody to give me a plastic bag in the meantime so I could put it in a bag at least. But here I have this beautiful, beautiful plant. Thank you. She herself was not a young chick, but there you go.
And she didn't even know it was your birthday, and she gave you a birthday present.
That's right.
Yeah.
I think that your example of the assumption that all old men are lecherous and need to be avoided because they're dangerous, or controlled because their behavior is unbecoming, is absolutely an example of how the assumptions about ageism impact men. But it also it is about sexism. It absolutely is. Not because women have power over men, that's impossible. But it's about when we talk about sexism, we're talking about assumptions that are made about both men and women. And so we get the nudge, nudge, wink, wink, boys will be boys, which works out well for men most of the time. But as they age, that nudge, nudge, wink, wink, boys will be boys becomes, oh, he's a dirty old man. But it's the same, it's still an observation about men's sexuality that assumes that they have one, which for elder women, we're not assumed to have one. As soon as we stop having babies, we become completely desexualized. I mean,
hey,
look at how many women on TV have roles in it who are like over the age of 40, almost none. But we have men active on television. We have men reading the news.
Hey.
Into old age and long and white hair, but we take women off the air reading the news as soon as they get a wrinkle.
I wonder whether these discriminations become self-fulfilling prophecies, because I recently had a man say to me, you're still sexual at your age? And I said, yes, thank you, God.
But I'm talking about general assumptions, though. I'm not, like, in the sense that we give men a lot more leeway in terms of their sexual behavior in their youth. And so we don't deny the fact that men are sexual. We just decide that when they're old, they're inappropriately sexual. Right? But your sexuality remains. Women's gets completely erased.
It's interesting, you know, when we talk about media, Lisa LaFlamme, you can almost name the two women that have gray hair that are in media, but yet I watch a lot of global and national news. You know, the many men who are gray-haired, who are older, they still have leading roles or they have assignment areas. So I think it's being noticed, and so more people are pushing, you know, pushing at the labels, pushing at the door. You're seeing CBC in particular working to become more inclusive. And a comment that some people have gotten, now there are these university students and also people working on their doctorate and working on different things that have asked me about commenting about seniors. And I said, come on the podcast and hear directly, because I think that all of us, when people say, on your spins, I didn't know that people would know how to record like that. It's like, what do you think, we lost our voice? And so that's why I'm challenging and encouraging each of you who have told a story or shared something to record it so that it can go onto our spins, because people are noticing, wow, you know, their stories, their